The following is a recording of the Sunday morning service of Rangeville Community Church.
Who here is tired from sitting up late watching cricket? There are a few. It's been a riveting series, hasn't it? It's been quite amazing to see the ebb and the flow, the challenges of what's been happening. One of the things that's been, there's been a lot of talk about is Jothra Archer, the new paceman for the English team. He's bowling pretty fast, averaging about 150k per hour. That's pretty fast if you're a batsman facing that. There's been some interesting work done by a biomechanics researcher called Dr. Ferdinands just this last week. And he shows that from when Archer releases the ball till it hits the bat is 0.48 of a second. Now, it takes 0.2 seconds for someone to get their eye on the ball. That gives you 0.28 of a second to then decide how you're going to hit the ball and get into position to hit it. It's not long, is it? It's not long at all. And so what they discovered in this was that it's all about timing. It's all about actually perceiving where you think you've got to be and be actually rocking in a position that you can quickly move to go to wherever it is you've got in that 0.28 of a second to line yourself up and then flow through. It's all about you've got to be in the right place at the right time to get the right outcome. If any of those three things don't line up, you could be like Steve Smith. And that wasn't pretty, was it? Jesus didn't play cricket as far as we know. But his whole ministry was about being in the right place at the right time for the right result, wasn't it? That's what underscores what he does. And it's one of the key themes that flows through in John's Gospel as he teaches us about who Jesus is. And so at Rangeville at the moment, we've been looking through the Gospel of John and we see the way that Jesus meets people. We've been looking at the way that he has conversations, the way he asks questions, the way he responds to questions, because we want to learn about how we can have conversations with people, spiritual, meaningful conversations, how we should ask questions, how we should respond to questions. One of the things we've also been seeing is this way that Jesus does things in the right time, in the right way, for the right outcome. And so what I want to do today is, as we look at this passage that we've just heard read to us, is see the bigger picture of the Gospel of John so far. And so figuratively speaking, we're going to get in a drone and we're going to go up, all right? And we're going to look back at where we've been going. And to do that, we realize that in John chapter 1, it includes Jesus' baptism and then after his baptism, he then goes and finds his disciples. Now, his baptism was on the other side of the Jordan, a place called Bethany, and that's reasonably close down towards sort of the Jerusalem end of Israel. And what we see is that after he's got his disciples, it says then that the next day he decided to leave for Galilee. And so the big lake you can see down the bottom is the Dead Sea. The small one at the top is the Sea of Galilee. Jesus has been down closer to the Dead Sea where he was baptized. Then, having got his disciples, he heads up to Galilee. So he goes right up there. And then that's really the end of John chapter 1. So John chapter 2 is where Jesus turns water into wine up in Galilee. It says, on the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. So he's up in that region there, and that's where we see that first miracle take place. But then we read in verse 13, when it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Up actually means down. And I think up because people would go up. Jerusalem was up on a hill. And I think they went up the hill, even though it's down on the map. And so what did Jesus do in John chapter 2 when he goes to Jerusalem? He cleans out the temple. He sees the evil that's happening in his father's house and he clears out the temple. That's John chapter 2. In John chapter 3, Jesus has a conversation with one of the Pharisees, a guy called Nicodemus. He talks with him about what it means to be born again. And then it says, after this, so after the conversation with Nicodemus, Jesus and his disciples went out into the Judean countryside where he spent some time with them and baptized. And so he's now baptizing people there. That's an important thing. We're going to come back to that a little bit later on, of these followers of Jesus who were baptized in that region. So then, after that, we read in John chapter 4 that he left Judea. So he left where he's been baptizing and he went back once more to Galilee. So he's on his way back up. And remember, in John chapter 4 is where he meets the woman at the well. And so what we read in verse 4, now he had to go through Samaria, so he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar. And you can see that there on the map as he's heading back towards Galilee. He stops there. He then continues on and he gets to Galilee and he heals the official's son. And it says in verse 54, this was the second sign Jesus performed after coming from Judah to Galilee. So Jesus has gone from Judah and now he's back up in Galilee again. We start John chapter 5, verse 1. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. So he heads from Galilee back down to Jerusalem. What's he do in Jerusalem? Well, we looked at this passage. It was the healing of a man who'd been paralyzed or a paralytic. And he was at the Pool of Siloam. What was significant was when Jesus did this miracle. He did it on a Sabbath. And so what we read then was, because he'd done it on the Sabbath, for this reason they tried all the more to kill him. Not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. All of John chapter 5 then we're seeing is happening down here around Jerusalem. Then we get to John chapter 6. Jesus goes back up to Galilee. You're seeing a theme here? One chapter's taking us one place, then we're going back to the other. We're moving back and forth between the two. And in John chapter 1, verse 6, sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee. That's where he feeds the 5,000. That's where he walks on water on the Sea of Galilee. Now, what we know from John chapter 6, verse 4, when I preached on this, I drew attention to the aspect of the timing that it said it was near the Passover. So we know that the start of John chapter 6 happens around the Passover. We now come to John chapter 7, which we're starting today, and we discover it is around the Feast of Tabernacles. So there's been 6 months from when Jesus has walked on water and fed the 5,000, and during that 6 months he's been staying around Galilee. He's continued to perform more miracles. We know that because Matthew, Mark and Luke tell us that. And he's also been teaching his disciples a lot of things. And we're now ready to start John chapter 7. What we discover here is that what we've been seeing through all of what I've just summarized is that Jesus is constantly going from one place to another because he needs to be in the right place at the right time for the right result. Do you remember in John chapter 4 how it says now he had to go through Samaria and he just happened to get there as a woman that he was meant to meet happened to be at the well? Like, isn't that amazing? God had just set up all these circumstances and Jesus is listening to his Father and saying, God, where do you want me to be and who do you want me to talk to today? And so it's always about trying to hear what God is saying so he is where he's meant to be at the right time. John chapter 7 starts off, after this, Jesus went around in Galilee. And as I said, we know there's about 6 months that is happening there. And then it goes on, and if we recall what is happening here, Jesus' first visit was down to Jerusalem, was where he cleaned out the temple. That didn't make him real popular, did it? He then went back up to Galilee. But then when he came down to Jerusalem again in John chapter 5, he healed someone on the Sabbath. That didn't make him real popular, did it? You see, whenever Jesus went down to Jerusalem, he was breaking mindsets around patterns of life, around religious practices that had become so focused on the religion that they'd lost perspective on God the Father. And so when Jesus went to Jerusalem, people got upset. And that was a problem. Now, one of the challenges is that all devout Jews were encouraged to go to the three major festivals in Jerusalem each year. The Passover, the Festival of First Fruits, which we also call Pentecost, and the Festival of Tabernacles. And so in John chapter 7, it tells us that the Feast of Tabernacles is approaching. And Jesus' brothers are really keen to fulfill their responsibility and head up to Jerusalem. And they're trying to convince Jesus that he should come with them. And this is what we read. But when the Jewish Feast of Tabernacles was near, Jesus' brothers said to him, "Leave Galilee and go to Judea, so that your disciples there may see the works you do. No one who wants to become a public figure acts in secret. Since you are doing these things, show yourself to the world." For even his own brothers did not believe in him. Now, we've just read that Jesus is hanging around in Galilee because he knows that if he goes down to Jerusalem, the Jewish leaders will try to kill him. That's what we're aware of. So what do his brothers do? They encourage him to go to Jerusalem. When you've got brothers like that, who needs enemies? But why would they try and convince Jesus to go to Jerusalem knowing it could be fatal? See, at the end of John chapter 6, Jesus had gone from Mr. Popularity. He had just fed 5,000 men plus women and children. And he'd gone from Mr. Popularity to Mr. Rejected. He'd gone from maybe 12,000 happy, well-fed followers at the start of the chapter down to 12 by the end of the chapter. But they're just the local disciples. They're the disciples that were in the northern part around Galilee. But remember, he had all these other ones that his disciples had been baptizing down in Judea. There are all these other followers of Jesus in another part of the country. Now, maybe Jesus' brothers thought Jesus has blown it up here in Galilee with that whole eat my bread stuff. He's gone from 12,000 followers down to 12. Well, he might have blown it up here in Galilee, but remember he's got a lot of followers down in Judea. All those ones that have been baptized down there. So what they say to him is, "Leave Galilee and go to Judea so that your disciples there may see the works you do." So they're saying, "Look, we know you've got disciples there. It'd be really good for them to see what you can do. So how about you go down there and regain your popularity status? Jesus, your miracles are good." See, there's no denial by his brothers of the fact that he could do miracles. They're saying to him, "You could be more popular. This is good brotherly advice. Go back to Judea. Win more converts. And we'll go with you and we'll be your PR team." That's what's being portrayed in this. Now, what we also know is that this is happening around the Feast of Tabernacles, because it tells us that in verse 2. Now, as I said earlier, all devout Jews were encouraged to go to one of the three feasts, and the reality is it wasn't practical. Someone had to stay home and milk the goats and the cows and feed the donkey and all of that. So there were some who always had to stay home. So, yes, many went up for the three festivals, but not everyone could. But of the three festivals, the one that had the highest attendance, the one that was most popular, was this one, Feast of Tabernacles. And it had the biggest crowds. So if you wanted to become a public figure, timing matters. If you want to show off miracles, Surely you'd want to do it when the biggest crowd is in town, right? That would be a logical thing to do. It's far more effective to grow your popularity around a big crowd than anything you're going to do in Galilee. They said to him, "No one who wants to become a public figure acts in secret, not here in the backwoods. Since you're doing these things, show yourself to the world. Go to the big smoke. Go to the big city. Go where the crowds are. Show yourself to the world." It's all about timing. If you want to be a public figure, go. The crowds are there. And as I said earlier, it's interesting that Jesus' brothers don't deny the fact or don't doubt the fact that he could perform miracles. As I said, since you are doing these things, they know he can do them. But we see that they did not believe in him. Here, John is recapping for us the same story as he just told us in the previous chapter, John chapter 6. Because there, the people saw that Jesus could break bread and break fish, and he could do it all day long, and he could keep feeding more and more and more people. Those people didn't doubt his miracles. But when he told them the truth of what it meant to follow him, when they truly understood what it meant to have faith and realize it was costly, they left him. Jesus knew that public miracles could win him favor, but not faith from his followers. And it's interesting, his brothers now, those who are closer to him, were of the same mindset. John shows us in John chapter 6, that might be the view of the crowds. John shows us in John chapter 7, it's true of his own family. They did not believe in him. See, it's a really important principle. John tells us it twice. Are we willing to believe in Jesus, or do we just want the benefits of Jesus? Do we chase the benefit of healing? Do we chase the benefit of God just to answer our prayers for a better job, for provision? Or do we truly desire Jesus? Do we truly chase him for who he is? See, John tells us in John chapter 6 that the fickle crowd don't get it. He tells us in John chapter 7 that the family doesn't get it either. Jesus' brothers are saying to him, show your works to the world. It's interesting. They say to him, show your works to the world. So Jesus responds back addressing those same two things, world and works. Because in verse 7, he talks about those two things. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify its works are evil. See, what Jesus says here to his brothers is, you don't get it. You're interested in winning over the world because you're part of the world. But the world doesn't know me. It's not the first time John tells us this. In fact, remember right back at the beginning of this series, we looked at the prologue, John chapter 1. It's sort of like that abstract concept, this abstract that summarizes all of John's gospel. In John chapter 1 verse 10, it said this, "He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him." And so now we see Jesus saying the same thing. The world doesn't really know me. In fact, the world hates me because I testify its works are evil. Not only does the world not know Jesus, it hates him. Why? Because he's calling out the evil in the world. One of the things Jesus does, particularly when he goes to Jerusalem, is he demonstrates the difference between good and evil, and he demonstrates the difference between real faith and religion. And it doesn't go down well, does it? It causes the Jewish leaders to actually want to take his life. You see, when he'd been in Jerusalem the first time since his public ministry, he called out the evil in the temple. He went through the temple and he cleansed it. Made him really unpopular. The next time he went back there, he confronted the religious Pharisees and their mindsets about healing on the Sabbath. and the fact that he would rather see someone's life restored and transformed than worry what day of the week it happened on. It didn't go down well. We read earlier that the Pharisees wanted to kill him because he had healed on the Sabbath. See, the world hated him because he names and confronts evil. And it is true today that in our society, when we will stand up and we will name evil, when we will call it out, when we will confront it, there will be pushback. There will be negativity that will come in response to that. And you see, one of the things that Jesus does is that he's saying, if I'm going to go back to Jerusalem, it'll be in God's timing, for God's reasons. His brothers are saying, let's go back. We're your PR team, we'll tell everyone you're here. How's that going to go down? So Jesus responds to them. My time is not yet here. For you, any time will do. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify that its works are evil. You go to the festival. I'm not going up to this festival because my time has not yet fully come. After he had said this, he stayed in Galilee. See, Jesus said, my time is not yet here, because timing is everything. Just ask any politician. You see, if they've got something that is really good news, they put out a press release, they announce the release of that good news at a time that's going to have optimum coverage in the media, don't they? What do they do if it's bad news? They put it out at 5 p.m. on the weekend leading into grand final. Timing is everything. In John's Gospel, as we read through it, we see the word time used many, many times. One of the weaknesses we have in our English language, though, is that we can have a word in English that we may use in different contexts or in different ways, but not understand the nuances that are intended behind it. Because if we actually look back into the Greek that sits behind it, we see there are three words in Greek that in English are all translated time. And let me take a moment and actually unpack that, because that's actually really significant for us to understand what Jesus just said. The most common Greek word used for time is hora. It's translated as time or as hour. And one of the key themes of John's Gospel is this knowledge that Jesus knows the time when he will go to Jerusalem to be crucified. Hora is Jesus knowing that he will have a time or an hour where he'll go to Jerusalem to be crucified. So in John chapter 4, he's talking with the woman at the well. And he says, yet a time is coming and has now come when true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for they are the kind of worshippers the Father seeks. So he talks here about a time is coming. It's a hora. It's a time that's very, very significant as he moves towards Jerusalem. We see it also really clearly actually in Matthew's Gospel. In Matthew 26, he replied, go into the city to a certain man and tell him that the teacher says, my appointed time is near. I'm going to celebrate the Passover with my disciples at your house. Jesus is saying, my appointed time, the time when I am due to be in Jerusalem, where I will be crucified. This is this context of hora. On other occasions, John uses a different word for time. It's the word chronos. Many of you would be familiar with chronology or chronological. That's the foundation. Chronos is the foundation or the root word for chronology. And it's used to refer to a duration of time, a short time or a long time. So when we looked at John chapter 5, when Jesus went to the pool of Siloam and healed the paralytic, remember he'd been a paralytic for 37 years? And what it says in John chapter 6 verse 5, when Jesus saw him lying there and learned he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, do you want to get well? So whenever we see chronos, it's only used five times. It always says short time or long time. Okay, so it talks about duration of time. But there is this other word for time. John's gospel only has it in John chapter 7. He doesn't use this word at any other point when he wants to talk about time. He only uses it here in this passage. It's the word kairos. It means the right time. And so let's read this. Therefore, Jesus told them, and I'm going to put it into this context now, my right time is not yet here. For you, any time will do. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify its works evil. You go to the festival. I'm not going up to this festival because my right time has not yet fully come. Kairos time is not time in terms of hours or minutes, like chronos. It's not when Jesus will be glorified, like hora. It's the right time to have perfect timing, to do things exactly when you're meant to do it. It often is in the context of a very limited period of time when things are brought to a head. When you know that unless you do it at exactly the right time, it could go pear-shaped. So, kairos time is the right time. This is really important for us to understand this passage. Because, you see, Jesus' brothers could go there any time they wanted and no one would care. No one would notice them. They were just one of the crowd of the hundreds of thousands that would come. But if Jesus came, it had to be the right time. Because you see, as we continue in this passage from chapter 11, it says this. Now, at the festival, the Jewish leaders were watching for Jesus and asking, where is he? Among the crowds, there was widespread whispering about him. Some said he's a good man. Others replied, no, he deceives the people. But no one would say anything publicly about him for fear of the leaders. Do you see this? In Jerusalem, everyone's talking about Jesus. All these people want to know, is he here? The Jewish leaders looking out for him. Why? Because we've already seen in John chapter 5 and at the start of John chapter 7, they're looking out for him because they want to kill him. So that they're asking, where is he? That had everyone really worried. And so no one's going to speak out loud and openly talk about Jesus. So they're all in these hushed whispers. I think he's a good man. Could even be the Messiah. And others are going, no. I heard the Jewish leaders think he's a fake. They say he's a deceiver. He's a false Christ. You see, the Jewish leaders got everyone so worried that no one's actually game to really speak out loud what they're thinking. Now, if that's the environment where, if you know things aren't going well between you and others and you walk into the room and suddenly everyone stops talking, that's what it's going to be like for Jesus, isn't it? He's going to arrive in Jerusalem and everyone's talking about him. So, would any time do? Would going with his brothers, who are going to sing and shout and go, hey, Jesus is here, is that going to be helpful? Jesus is not interested in the timing of the world. He's interested in God's timing. He's interested in kairos, the right time. This is so characteristic of Jesus' ministry. Because you see, so often his timing doesn't make sense in the eyes of the world. There were times when he could have timed things differently and become really popular. Like in John chapter 4 verses 1 to 3. Jesus' popularity stakes were really going up. This is the stage where he was baptizing, or his disciples were baptizing. And as we saw then, they were baptizing more than John the Baptist. Their popularity was really going through the roof. But as soon as Jesus realizes this or hears this, it says in John 4 verse 3, so he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. See, Jesus wasn't setting his agenda on the world's agenda or the world's thought patterns that says get more popular, get bigger. Jesus bases what he's going to do and when he's going to do it on God's agenda, not the world's. And there were times when if Jesus had timed things differently, he could have avoided a whole lot of conflict. Like in John chapter 5, he heals a paralytic. In John chapter 9, he heals a blind man. And he does both these on a Sabbath. The world would say, don't heal on a Sabbath. Think about which day of the week you're going to do that on. It's not religiously right to heal on the Sabbath. It will make you extremely unpopular. What's Jesus do? He heals on the Sabbath. And it makes him extremely unpopular. Why? Because he sets his actions on the Father's heart for those people. And on demonstrating something of God's timing. See, it's God's agenda, not the world's agenda. There's another classic example that we'll look at in a little while in John chapter 11. Jesus' friend Lazarus is sick. And this message comes to Jesus and says, your friend Lazarus is sick. Would you come? And Jesus doesn't. He waits another two whole days. Now, surely if you get a message that your friend is sick and the world expects you to come because he's a really good friend, surely you would go. That's what the world's expecting. Jesus doesn't. He waits 2 days. And then he goes, knowing Lazarus is dead. What sort of friend is that? But that's what Jesus does. It doesn't make sense that you would not go when you had the chance to heal him, but you do go once he's dead. But you see, Jesus isn't going to conform to the agenda of the world. He's interested in God's agenda, God's bigger purpose. And this is a huge challenge for us. You see, we live in the world, and the world tries to get us to set our agenda. It says to us, if you want to be popular, you should do this. This is the place to be seen. This is who you should go and meet. Demonstrate your abilities in a certain way or a certain time or a certain place. And the reality is there will be occasions when you should do that. If that's what God has told you to do, and it also lines up with what the world's saying, go do it. If you're in business or in the arts or in a whole range of areas and it's right for you to grow in popularity and do certain things in certain places because the Lord's telling you as well as it's good in the worldly perspective, then be obedient to what God says, of course. But when we look at this passage today, many people think the passage makes little sense. Jesus' brothers are saying, let's go to Jerusalem so we can show you off and you can show off some miracles and get more disciples. And Jesus says, my time is not yet here. But then there's this challenging verse at the end. However, after his brothers had left for the festival, he went also, not publicly, but in secret. Did Jesus change his mind? Is that what happened here? No. What he's saying is that it's not the right time or place for me to do that with you. It's just not the right occasion. It's not God's timing. It's not God's occasion for me to show off the way the world wants me to, the way you want me to. I'll go in the way God wants me to go. There's a little bit of extra information that I think is helpful here. This is actually a really pivotal point in John's Gospel, because this is the point where he says his final farewell to Galilee before his crucifixion. This is where he grew up. This is where he has his childhood memories. This is where he's been with his family for 33 years. He's heading to Jerusalem, knowing they're his final days. Still going to be some months, but still, he knows that he leaves now and won't come back. Do you think he wants to leave under his brother's terms or his terms? See, it's God's timing, but he's going to go in his own way, secretly, not publicly, not under the duress of brothers, but under the word and the blessing of his Father that says, it's the right time. See, this is why I took that moment to explain the Greek. Because if we only put this in the context of the way we think about time as far as chronology, we miss the importance of this passage. It's all about being in the right place at the right time for the right reason. And Jesus says, I'll go when it's my Kairos time, not just because it's 9 o'clock at whatever day of the week it is. We've got to ask ourselves, what's this going to look like in our world? What's it mean for you to do something when the world says you should do this? And it makes sense from a worldly perspective. And you know it might be good for your career. But God says, don't do it. It's not the right time. Or if we put it around the other way, where God is saying, I want you to do this. And the world's saying, that's crazy. Why would you do that? It makes no sense to go and do that now. And God says, it's my time. It's the right time. Will you go? Even when the world says it's not good for your career or it's not good for your health, what will you do? Can I encourage you that in these times, it might be really hard, but you've got to stop and say, God, is this your time? Is this the right time? Let it be his timing that decides your actions. Let his timing be the right time for you. And so we're going to take a minute or so now just to stop in silence and reflect on that. To reflect back on times in your life when it just didn't make sense for you to do something at a certain point in time. But you look back now and you go, God, your hand was on that. That was your timing, not mine. Or maybe you're in a situation now where you feel you're meant to do a certain thing now, but you're not sure. And the world's saying one thing, and you're trying to hear God. This morning, as we reflect on Kairos time, let's just pray that God would reveal to you the right time, his time, either in testimony of your past or in your current situation right now. So come, Father God. Come, Father God, and release Kairos time here. In John's Gospel, you saved it just for John chapter 7 to say, this is all about the right time. So, Lord, let us now in silence. And I ask, Lord, I'm just going to step out here. I just ask, Lord, you'd release an anointing of Kairos time here this morning.
Yes, God.
And that, Lord, your Holy Spirit will speak Kairos into people's lives over this next time as we just reflect and as we seek to hear you.
That concludes our sermon recording. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions or require further information, please contact our church office on 07463611144, or you can email us office@rangeville.com.